too much, many sufferings. That suffering comparing to other living beings' suffering is nothing now. Too much, very big suffering, some sort like that. It's very difficult to express, but they suffer a lot during that period. That means the God realm, even if they take birth in the God realms, there is no ultimate happiness. Unless and until they are away from this samsara, they don't have any ultimate happiness. They will have to leave this precious or their God's body and then take birth in certain realms according to their previous accumulations. So here also it shows that there is no happiness in God realm also. That means if we go on seeing in this samsara, there is no place where there is ultimate blissful happiness. Now, if we won't find that ultimate happiness in this samsara, then why we are taking more importance on the samsaric materials, samsaric pleasures? There is no question of giving more attachment to those things, because they are, for the time being, they are not the real objects which will give you the ultimate happiness. So it doesn't mean that if there is no any happiness through in this samsara, it doesn't mean that there is no ultimate happiness. Yes, there is happiness. If we can practice, if we can give our firm faith to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha and take refuge, then normally we can also gain the ultimate happiness. So here, when I'm talking something about the samsara, the places in samsara, there are six realms. Wherever we go, wherever we search, we never see the ultimate happiness. Wherever we take birth in this samsara, it is a cycle of life. If we do something good, we may take birth in the human being or in the realm of God. If we do something bad, if our actions are bad, if we accumulate some sort of good karma, good merit, then normally we take birth in higher realms like human being and demigod and God's realm. That means a little bit better. But among these six realms, the best one is a human being. That is why we say that human life is the precious. Because we see the goodness and the badness both in human beings. If we do something good, yes, result will be there. If we do something bad, yes, the result will be suffering. So the human beings know it. Whereas in the God realm, they don't know the suffering. They know only the happiness. They know the luxurious life, the comfortable life. So through comfortable life, we can't achieve the ultimate goal. But if we take birth in a human life and attain this precious human life, then through that we can understand both, through that we can now choose which is better, the good karmas, good accumulation of merit or bad accumulation of demerit, which is better? We can choose. We have the potentiality to understand that. So through these teachings, from the very beginning, we say that the preciousness of human being, then everything is impermanence, the ever presence of impermanence, then the accumulation of good karmas and bad karmas, and then seeing the sufferings of this samsara. If we see the sufferings of this samsara, then normally we can change our mind towards Dharma. We can leave the attachment to the samsaric pleasure. Because through the samsaric pleasure, we are unable to gain the ultimate happiness. So why not turn your mind through those things, through giving the attachment to the worldly pleasures, and reverse your mind and try to liberate from this samsara. Now that can be done only through the practice of Buddha Dharma. So these are the four foundations, I think so, which will help us to turn our mind towards Dharma. Now, according to the practice of Buddha Dharma, we say that these four foundations are really necessary for the beginners. It is good enough to think over the preciousness of this human life, to think over the impermanence of all the materials, all living things, or living beings, whatever. If you go on thinking that they are not the permanent, they are impermanent. Impermanence, ever presence of impermanence and death, both. And then, if you go on thinking on the happiness and unhappiness, these two things comes from the actions, from our own actions. If we really wanted to obtain or gain happiness, then normally we must prefer to accumulate something good. Sow some good seeds under the ground, some medicinal seed, so that it may grow into a medicinal plant or herbs. If you think, say, because of ignorant, we don't know the result. So that is why we normally used to think that we want happiness, we don't need suffering. But whatever we are doing, whatever we are acting, we are doing against our happiness. So through acting something bad, through accumulating demerit, we can't achieve happiness. If we go on doing something good, practice something good, or think something good, then normally the result will be happiness. Nobody can say that if you do something good, nobody can say that you will gain suffering. Because that is the nature of the actions. Even if somebody give you some troubles saying that now you must go to the hell, even if some says that way and your actions is always good, then nobody can force you to go down to the hell. Because your actions is good, even if whole world says that you are going down to the hell and your actions is good, normally you will go upward, or you will take birth in the three higher realms. Now, if you go on acting something bad, if you go on killing animals, speaking something ill of others with jealousy, hatred, and anger, then even if you think, even if you wish to gain happiness, that is impossible. That is impossible. Definitely you will take birth in a certain lower realms. You have no place to take birth in the higher realms. So this depends upon the actions. Now normally the talking about the actions, the most important is through your mind. If your mind is good, whatever you do will normally come good. Now in the Buddhist teaching there is one story. It is not story, but it is a real teaching. Once the king wanted to go to fetch the jewels from the oceans. He wanted to fetch the jewels from the oceans because he wanted to help his people in his country. His people are facing some problems of famine. So, just to solve that problem, he wanted to go to fetch the jewels. And he took 500 persons with him in the ship and he started going in the ocean. And he went crossing the ocean and he is able to bring many jewels and gems. And he was returning back from there. And on the way, he saw, there is a person, a bad person in that group. He thinks that now the jewels and golds, all the precious things are in the ship. Now he wanted to kill all 499 persons. And he wanted to own all the jewels for himself. And he planned to kill all the people in the ship. But that was understood by the captain. The captain was a bodhisattva himself. He is the king. He knew that. So he thinks that if this person is trying to kill all 499 persons, that means he is accumulating a great demerit, a great sin. And after killing that, he accumulates a huge demerit, bad karma. So he, in the near future, if he dies, then he will take birth in the hell. There is no place in the higher realms. Definitely he will have to go down. So the captain thought that, I wanted to save that man now. Even though that man is trying to kill the captain and all the crews, that means 499 people. In total there are 500 people. So the captain thought he is really very compassionate. He is a bodhisattva himself. So he thought that, I don't want to send that person into the hell. I want to save him now. Even if he is trying to kill him. But he wanted to save that person. And those 499 persons who are now, who will have to suffer. If he want to kill all those things, they will also suffer. So, the captain wanted to save these 499 and the person who is trying to kill that. And what he did now? The king straight went to that person and he killed that man. He killed that man. That bodhisattva or the captain, he accumulated bad karmas. It doesn't matter. He accumulated bad karmas. But it doesn't mean that. It is some sort, very huge demerit. Because he kills that man with a good intention. So his intention is very important here. With a compassionate mind, with a good heart, he went to him and he killed him. That means he saved him falling down in the hell. That is more important. And he saved all these 499 people also. Even though he accumulated some sort of bad karmas, but he doesn't bother for himself. He wanted to save all the beings. So here, now when I said this example, a person whose action is something bad, he kills the man. The action is bad, no doubt. But his way of thinking, his intention is completely right. He doesn't bother the accumulating of bad karmas and suffering with it may give him some sort of suffering in the near future, but he doesn't bother for himself. He thinks for the other beings. He thinks for that person who is now going to accumulating a huge sin, demerit, bad karma, may fall down into the hell. So he saved that person. So here what I mean to say is, the person's intention is more important than the action. Action comes only if he thinks. So here the mind is more important. If his mind is clear, if his mind is compassionate, then I think so. It's more better than the outer action. Yes, again, some people, most of the great masters, if we look back into the history, if we look back into the biographies of many great masters, most of the masters, from their mouth, they speak some rough words, saying that you dog, you son of bitch, something like that. But his mind is completely pure. He wanted to say it that way and make that man's mind turn towards the Dharma. Just imagine the Milarepa in Marva. Marva is a marvelous teacher. He is really very well experienced. So Marva, when he saw Milarepa, when he speak to Milarepa, his words are always very rough. He never smiles to Milarepa. He's always in a wrathful form before Milarepa. But it doesn't mean that his action or his speech is very rough and very wrathful. It doesn't mean that. He is a bad teacher, but he is extremely, very compassionate teacher. He wanted to purify the defilement, purify the bad karmas accumulated by Milarepa through giving him some lessons, because Milarepa, during his teenage, he accumulated many, many bad karmas. He killed many, many animals and birds. So just to purify all those thinks Marva is always wrathful and he always used to speak rough words. So this is one kind of example that intention and mind is more important than the outer action and the speech. Now here I think so again some may misunderstand here, because you just imagine all those persons who speak bad or rough words are not good teachers, or those persons who shows a very wrathful face, angry face, it doesn't mean that he's a good teacher. It doesn't mean that way. Now, again, it is important to form the mind. If his mind is soft, if his mind is compassionate, if his intention is good, then whatever he speaks, whatever he acts, is always simple and soft. His voice is also very soft. His way of looking, his way of action is also very soft. That also shows that the inner power of the individual is really very soft. Or there also we can say that he is a good practitioner, he is a good teacher. So it is very difficult for us to distinguish what kind of person they are, what kind of my teacher is. Nobody knows that. If some teachers have a technique of showing speaking very rough words, showing wrathful, angry face, but he is completely compassionate. But some teachers are really very compassionate, good-hearted, and his action is also completely very simple, humble, and the speech is also very soft. So we should not misunderstand these the actions of the great teachers. So here I want to stress that action and speech is not at all important. In certain level it is important, but it is not always important. For example, a great teacher, Paito Rinpoche again, he is one of the greatest teachers of not only for the Buddhist, but it is for all living beings. His teachings are really very impressive and very touching to all living beings. Now this great teacher, he was also a student of a great teacher. There is a saying or there is a story about Paito Rinpoche. Paito Rinpoche, he was a student of Dzogchenze. So Dzogchenze is a very big figure, a very tall, very fat. Seems to when we seek the audience of Dzogchenze, it's really very difficult to stand, look face to face to Dzogchenze, because he seems to be very wrathful. Then we can't stand in front of him. So Paito Rinpoche, what he did? Paito Rinpoche was practicing, because maybe his teacher, master, might have taught him to visualize some sort of mandalas. So Paito Rinpoche was visualizing some mandalas, and it is very difficult for him to visualize that. he practiced visualizing the mantras for about 2 weeks, or more than that, I think so. 1 month or 2 months, he practiced visualizing the mantras, certain mantras of the deities. And it was very difficult for him to vision the clear picture of the mantra. So he became tired now. He became frustrated. Then Bhedu Rinpoche went to Dzogchenze. One day Bhedu Rinpoche went to Dzogchenze and he opens the door and he was coming from that side and Dzogchenze was sitting on his own feet. And when Bhedu Rinpoche was coming from there, Bhedu Rinpoche just bowed down and prostrate. Full stretch prostration. He started doing the prostrations to him. But he comes nearer and nearer to Dzogchenze. And Dzogchenze was talking. When he saw Bhedu Rinpoche, he became so angry. He says, seems to be very angry. And he says, "You dog, you son of bitch, you dirty fellow," something like that. He was showering very rough words to Bhedu Rinpoche. And Bhedu Rinpoche, with a deep faith, he was prostrating to his teacher, master, and coming towards him. With prostration, he is coming nearer and nearer, but Dzogchenze was just picking some stones, some pebbles, many different types of small stones are there. He just picks up and started throwing upon the Bhedu Rinpoche. And Bhedu Rinpoche was still prostrating and coming towards Dzogchenze. And he comes here nearby. And when Bhedu Rinpoche comes very near to Dzogchenze, then Dzogchenze was so, seems to be very, you say, angry, seems to be very furious, some sort like that, very wrathful. But as soon as Bhedu Rinpoche comes very near, he gives him a big blow, or he kicks him. He kicks Bhedu Rinpoche and giving a big blow, and giving a one slap even. And Bhedu Rinpoche was, with deep devotion, he became so happy. And immediately, as soon as the Dzogchenze slaps him, his mind opens. His Buddha nature awakes from there. And immediately, the clear picture of the mantras of certain deities comes to his mind immediately. It is said that 12 kinds of mantras comes in his mind clearly, and it remained clear for 2 weeks. So a great master normally used to teach, sometimes he used to give the real teachings of the Buddha in certain systems, showing wrathful face, giving bad words, rough words to them. Now actually, Dzogchenze was not throwing the stones. Actually, he was not blowing to him. But when he was throwing the stone, he was purifying all the defilements of Bhedu Rinpoche. When he slaps him, all the body, speech, and mind obscurations, defilements were cleared, cleansed, showered. Immediately, he awakens from his mind, the real Buddha nature awakes from him, within him, and he knows everything. From there onwards, Bhedu Rinpoche became one of the greatest teachers, and he started giving this kind of teachings to all living beings. Now here, this also gives some sort of actions which are very important. Now through actions, we can't judge it. Through the outer look, we can't judge a person. He may be Now, Dzogchen say he is a real Buddha himself. But through action, somebody saw these kind of actions, then they will think that he is a bad teacher. We can't say, through the actions, we can't judge a person. So in this way,